"Your Majesty," he said, nodding for Calamy to write, "consider my offer of troops, please. And as you do, might I suggest that you begin searching among your people for budding Knights Radiant? They are the key to working Oath Gates. We have had a number of Radiants manifest near the Shattered Plains. They are formed through an interaction with certain Spren, who seem to be searching for worthy candidates. I can only assume this is happening worldwide. It is entirely likely that among the people of your city, someone has already spoken the oaths."
"You are giving up quite an advantage, Dalinar," Aladar noted.
"I'm planting a seed, Aladar," Dalinar said. "And I'll plant it on any hill I can find, regardless of who owns it. We must fight as a unified people."
"I don't dispute that," Aladar said, standing up and stretching. "But your knowledge of the Radiance is a bargaining point, one that can perhaps draw people to you, force them to work with you. Give up too much and you might find a headquarters for the Knights Radiant in every major city across Roshar. Rather than working together, you'll have them competing to recruit."
He was right, unfortunately. Dalinar hated turning knowledge into bargaining chips, but what if this was why he'd always failed in his negotiations with the High Princes? He wanted to be honest, straightforward, and let the pieces fall where they may. But it seemed that someone better at the game, and more willing to break the rules, always snatched the pieces from the air as he dropped them, then set them down the way they wanted. "And," he said quickly for Calamy to add, "we would be happy to send our Radiance to train those you discover, then introduce them to the system and fraternity of Urethiru, to which each of them has a right by nature of their oaths." Calamy added this, then twisted the span reed to indicate they were done and waiting for a reply.
"We will consider this," Calamy read as the span reed scribbled across the page. "The Crown of Thelenor thanks you for your interest in our people, and we will consider negotiations regarding your offer of troops. We have sent some of our few remaining cutters to track down the fleeing Parshmen and will inform you of what we discover. Until we speak again, High Prince."
"Storms," Navani said. "She reverted to Queen speak. We lost her somewhere in there."
Dalinar sat down in the seat next to her and let out a long sigh.
"Dalinar?"
she said.
"I'm fine, Navani," he said. "I can't expect glowing commitments to cooperation on my first attempt. We'll just have to keep trying."
The words were more optimistic than he felt. He wished he could talk to these people in person instead of over Spanreed. They talked to the Princess of Ysir next, followed by the Prince of Tashik. They didn't have oath gates and were less essential to his plan, but he wanted to at least open lines of communication with them. Neither gave him more than vague answers. Without the Azish Emperor's blessing, he wouldn't be able to get any of the smaller Makabaki kingdoms to commit. Perhaps the Imuli or the Tukari would listen, but he'd only ever get one of those two, considering their long-standing feud. At the end of the last conference, Aladar and his daughter excusing themselves, Dalinar stretched, feeling worn down. And this wasn't the end of it. He would have discussions with the monarchs of Eri. It had three, strangely. The Oathgate at Ral Elorim was in their lands, making them important, and they held sway over nearby Rira, which had another Oathgate. Beyond that, of course, there were the Shin to deal with. They hated using span reeds, so Navani had poked at them through a Thalen merchant who had been willing to relay information. Dalinar's shoulder protested as he stretched. He had found middle age to be like an assassin, quiet, creeping along behind him. Much of the time he would go about his life as he always had until an unexpected ache or pain gave warning. He was not the youth he had once been.
"And bless the Almighty for that," he thought idly, bidding farewell to Navani, who wanted to sift through information reports from various Spanreed stations around the world.
Aladar's daughter and scribes were gathering them in bulk for her. Dalinar collected several of his guards, leaving others for Navani should she need some extra hands, and climbed up along the rows of seats to the room's exit at the top.
Hovering just outside the doorway, like an axe hound banished from the warmth of the fire, stood Elikar.
"Your Majesty," Dalinar said, starting, "I'm glad you could make the meeting. Are you feeling better?"
"Why do they refuse you, Uncle?" Elikar asked, ignoring the question. "Do they think perhaps you will try to usurp their thrones?"
Dalinar drew in his breath sharply, and his guards looked embarrassed to be standing nearby. They backed up to give him and the king privacy.
"Elikar," Dalinar said.
"You likely think I say this in spite," the king said, poking his head into the room, noting his mother, then looking back at Dalinar. "I don't. You are better than I am. A better soldier, a better person, and certainly a better king."
"You do yourself a disservice, Elikar.
You must—" "Oh, save your platitudes, Dalinar. For once in your life, just be honest with me."
"You think I haven't been?"
Elikar raised his hand and lightly touched his own chest.
"Perhaps you have been, at times. Perhaps the liar here is me, lying to tell myself I could do this, that I could be a fraction of the man my father was. No, don't interrupt, Dalinar. Let me have my say. Void bringers? Ancient cities full of wonder? The desolations?"
Elikar shook his head.
Perhaps I'm a fine king. Not extraordinary, but not an abject failure. But in the face of these events, the world needs better than fine."
There seemed a fatalism to his words, and that sent a worried shiver through Dalinar.
"Elikar, what are you saying?"
Elikar strode into the chamber and called down to those at the bottom of the rows of seats.
"Mother! Brightness Teshav, would you witness something for me?"
"Storms, no," Dalinar thought, hurrying after Elikar. "Don't do this, son."
"We all must accept the consequences of our actions, Uncle," Elikar said. "I've been learning this very slowly, as I can be as dense as a stone." "But—" "Uncle, am I your king?" Elikar demanded.
"Yes."
"Well, I shouldn't be."
He knelt, shocking Navani and causing her to pull to a stop 3/4 of the way up the steps.
"Dalinar Kholin," Elikar said in a loud voice, "I swear to you now, there are princes and high princes. Why not kings and high kings? I give an oath, immutable and witnessed, that I accept you as my monarch. As Alethkar is to me, I am to you."
Dalinar breathed out, looking to Navani's aghast face, then down to his nephew, kneeling as a vassal on the floor.
"You did ask for this, Uncle," Elikar said. "Not specifically in words, but it is the only place we could have gone. You have slowly been taking command ever since you decided to trust those visions."
"I've tried to include you," Dalinar said.
Silly, impotent words. He should be better than that.
"You are right, Elikar. I'm sorry."
"Are you?" Elikar asked. "Are you really?"
"I'm sorry," Dalinar said, "for your pain. I'm sorry that I didn't handle this better. I'm sorry that this must be. Before you make this oath, tell me what you expect that it entails."
"I've already said the words," Elikar said, growing red-faced. "Before witnesses. It is done.
Oh, stand up," Dalinar said, grabbing him by the arm and hauling him to his feet. "Don't be dramatic. If you really want to swear this oath, I'll let you. But let's not pretend you can sweep into a room, shout a few words, and assume it's a legal contract."
Elikar pulled his arm free and rubbed it.
"Won't even let me abdicate with dignity."
"You're not abdicating,"
Navani said, joining them. She shot a glare at the guards, who stood watching with slack jaws, and they grew white at the glare. She pointed at them as if to say not a word of this to anyone else.
"Elikar, you intend to shove your uncle into a position above you. He's right to ask. What will this mean for Alethkar?"
"I—"
Elikar swallowed.
"He should give up his lands to his heir. Dalinar is a king of somewhere else, after all. Dalinar, High King of Urethiru,
Maybe the shattered planes.
He stood straighter, speaking more certainly.
Dalinar must stay out of the direct management of my lands. He can give me commands, but I decide how to see them accomplished.
It sounds reasonable,
Navani said, glancing at Dalinar. Reasonable, but gut-wrenching. The kingdom he'd fought for, the kingdom he'd forged in pain, exhaustion, and blood, now rejected him.
This is my land now, Dalinar thought. This tower covered in cold spren.
I can accept these terms, though at times I might need to give commands to your high princes.
As long as they're in your domain, Elokar said, a hint of stubbornness to his voice, I consider them under your authority. While they visit Urethiru, or the Shattered Plains, command as you wish. When they return to my kingdom, you must go through me.
He looked at Dalinar and then glanced down, as if embarrassed to be making demands.
Very well, Dalinar said, though we need to work this out with scribes before we make the change officially. And before we go too far, we should make certain there is still an Alethkar for you to rule.
I've been thinking the same thing, Uncle. I want to lead our forces to Alethkar and recapture our homeland. Something is wrong in Kulinar. More than these riots or my wife's supposed behavior, more than the Spanreeds going still. The enemy is doing something in the city. I'll take an army to stop it and save the kingdom.
Elokar? Leading troops? Dalinar had been imagining himself leading a force, cutting through the Voidbringer ranks, sweeping them from Alethkar and marching into Kulinar to restore order. Truth was, though, it didn't make sense for either of them to lead such an assault.
Elokar, Dalinar said, leaning in. I've been considering something. The Oath Gate is attached to the palace itself. We don't need to march an army all the way to Alethkar. All we need to do is restore that device. Once it works, we can transport our forces into the city to secure the palace, restore order, and fend off the Voidbringers.
Get into the city, Elokar said. Uncle, to do that, we might need an army in the first place.
No, Dalinar said. A small team could reach Kulinar far faster than an army. As long as there was a Radiant with them, they could sneak in, restore the Oath Gate, and open the way for the rest of us.
Elokar perked up.
Yes! I'll do it, Uncle. I'll take a team and reclaim our home. Aesudan is there. If the rioting is still happening, she's fighting against it.
That wasn't what the reports, before they'd cut off, had suggested to Dalinar. If anything, the Queen was the cause of the riots. And he certainly hadn't been intending Elokar to go on this mission himself.
Consequences. The lad was earnest, as he'd always been. Besides, Elokar seemed to have learned something from his near death at the hands of assassins. He was certainly humbler now than he'd been in years past.
It is fitting, Dalinar said, that their king should be the one who saves them. I will see that you have whatever resources you need, Elokar.
Glowing glory spren orbs burst around Elokar. He grinned at them.
I only seem to see those when I'm around you, Uncle. Funny. For all that I should resent you, I don't. It's hard to resent a man who is doing his best. I'll do it. I'll save Alethkar. I need one of your Radiants. The hero, preferably.
The hero?
The bridgeman, Elokar said. The soldier. He needs to go with me, so if I screw up and fail, someone will be there to save the city anyway.
Dalinar blinked.
That's very,
I've had ample chances to reflect lately, Uncle, Elokar said. The Almighty has preserved me despite my stupidity. I'll bring the bridgeman with me and I'll observe him. Figure out why he's so special. See if he'll teach me to be like him. And if I fail?
He shrugged.
Well, Alethkar is in safe hands regardless, right?
Dalinar nodded, bemused.
I need to make plans, Elokar said. I've only just recovered from my wounds, but I can't leave until the hero returns anyway. Could he fly me and my chosen team to the city? That would certainly be the fastest way. I will want every report we've had from Kolinar, and I need to study the Oathgate device in person. Yes, and have drawings done comparing it to the one in the city, and...
He beamed.
Thank you, Uncle. Thank you for believing in me. If only this small amount.
Dalinar nodded to him, and Elokar retreated, a spring in his step. Dalinar sighed, feeling overwhelmed by the exchange. Navani hovered by his side as he settled down in one of the seats for the Radiance, beside a pedestal for a little spren. On one side he had a king swearing to him an oath he didn't want. On the other, he had an entire group of monarchs who wouldn't listen to his most rational of suggestions. Storms.
Dalinar? Calamy said. Dalinar!
He leaped to his feet, and Navani spun. Calamy was watching one of the span reeds which had started writing. What was it now? What terrible news awaited him?
Your Majesty, Calamy read from the page, I consider your offer generous and your advice wise. We have located the device you call an oath gate. One of my people has come forward and, remarkably, claims to be radiant. Her spren directed her to speak with me. We plan to use her shard blade to test the device. If it works, I will come to you in all haste. It is well that someone is attempting to organize a resistance to the evils that befall us. The nations of Roshar must put aside their squabbles, and the reemergence of the holy city of Urethiru is proof to me that the Almighty guides your hand. I look forward to counseling with you and adding my forces to yours in a joint operation to protect these lands.
She looked up at him, amazed.
It was sent by Teravangian, king of Yakaved and Karbranth.
Teravangian? Dalinar hadn't expected him to reply so quickly. He was said to be a kindly, if somewhat simple, man. Perfect for ruling a small city-state with the help of a governing council. His elevation to king of Yakaved was widely seen as an act of spite from the former king, who hadn't wanted to give the throne to any of his rivals' houses. The words still warmed Dalinar. Someone had listened. Someone was willing to join him. Bless that man. Bless him. If Dalinar failed everywhere else, at least he would have King Teravangian at his side.
13. Chaperone. I ask only that you read or listen to these words. From Oathbringer. Preface. Shallan breathed out Stormlight and stepped through it, feeling it envelop her, transform her. She'd been moved upon request to Sabariel's section of Urethiru, in part because he'd promised her a room with a balcony, fresh air, and a view of the mountain peaks. If she couldn't be completely free of this building's shadowed depths, then at least she could have a home on the borders. She pulled at her hair, pleased to see it had turned black. She had become Vale, a disguise she'd been working on for some time. Shallan held up hands that were calloused and worked, even the safe hand. Not that Vale was unfeminine. She kept her nails filed and liked to dress nicely, keep her hair brushed. She simply didn't have time for frivolities. A good sturdy coat and trousers suited Vale better than a flowing hava, and she had no time for an extended sleeve covering her safe hand. She'd wear a glove, thank you very much. At the moment, she was dressed in her nightgown. She'd change later, once she was ready to sneak out into Urethiru's halls. She needed some practice first. Though she felt bad about the use of Stormlight when everyone else was scrimping, Dalinar had told her to train with her powers. She strode through her chamber, adopting Vale's gait. Confident and sturdy, never prim. You couldn't balance a book on Vale's head as she walked, but she'd happily balance one on your face after she knocked you unconscious. She circled the room several times, crossing the patch of evening light from the window. Her room was ornamented by bright circular patterns of strata on the walls. The stone was smooth to the touch, and a knife couldn't scratch it. There wasn't much furniture, though Shallan was hopeful that the latest scavenging expeditions to the war camps would return with something she could appropriate from Sabariel. For now, she did what she could with some blankets, a single stool, and, blessedly, a hand mirror. She'd hung it on the wall, tied to a stone knob that she assumed was for hanging pictures. She checked her face in the mirror. She wanted to get to the point where she could become Vale at a moment's notice, without needing to review sketches. She prodded at her features, but of course, as the more angular nose and pronounced forehead were a result of light weaving, she couldn't feel them. When she frowned, Vale's face mimicked the motion perfectly. "Something to drink, please," she said. "No, rougher. Drink. Now." "Too strong?" Pattern said. "The voice becomes a good lie."
"Thank you. I've been working on sounds."
Vale's voice was deeper than Shallan's. Rougher. She started to wonder how far could she go in changing how things sounded. For now, she wasn't sure she'd gotten the lips right in the illusion. She sauntered over to her art supplies and flipped open her sketchbook, looking for renditions of Vale she'd drawn instead of going to dinner with Sabariel and Palona. The first page of the sketchbook was of the corridor with the twisting strata she'd passed through the other day, lines of madness curling toward darkness. She flipped to the next, a picture of one of the tower's budding markets. Thousands of merchants, washwomen, prostitutes, innkeepers, and craftsmen of all varieties were setting up in Urethiru. Shallan knew well how many. She'd been the one to bring them all through the Oath Gate. In her sketch, the black upper reaches of the large market cavern loomed over tiny figures scurrying between tents, holding fragile lights. The next was another tunnel into darkness, and the next, then a room where the strata coiled about one another in a mesmerizing manner. She hadn't realized she'd done so many. She flipped 20 pages before she found her sketches of Vale. Yes, the lips were right. The build was wrong, however. Vale had a lean strength, and that wasn't coming through in the nightgown. It looked too much like Shallan's figure beneath. Someone knocked on the wooden plate hung outside her rooms. She had just a cloth draping the doorway right now. Many of the tower's doors had warped over the years. Hers had been ripped out, and she was still waiting on a replacement. The one knocking would be Palona, who had once again noticed that Shallan had skipped dinner. Shallan sucked in a breath, destroying the image of Vale, recovering some of the stormlight from her light weaving. "Come," she said. Honestly, it didn't seem to matter to Palona that Shallan was a storming knight radiant now. She'd still mother her all the... Adolin stepped in, carrying a large plate of food in one hand, some books under the other arm. He saw her and stumbled, nearly dropping it all. Shallan froze, then yelped and tucked her bare safe hand behind her back. Adolin didn't even have the decency to blush at finding her practically naked. He balanced the food in his hand, recovering from his stumble, and then grinned. "Out!" Shallan said, waving her free hand at him. "Out, out, out!" He backed away awkwardly, threw the draped cloth over the doorway. "Stormfather!" Shallan's blush was probably so bright they could have used her as a signal to send the army to war. She pulled on a glove, then wrapped that in a safe pouch, then threw on the blue dress she had draped over the back of her chair and did up the sleeve. She didn't have the presence of mind to pull on her bodice vest first. Not that she really needed one anyway. She kicked it under a blanket instead.
"In my defense," Adolin said from outside, "you did invite me in."
"I thought you were Palona," Shallan said, doing up the buttons on the side of her dress, which proved difficult, with three layers covering her safe hand.
You know, you could check to see who is at your door.
Don't make this my fault, Shallan said. You're the one slipping into young ladies' bedrooms practically unannounced.
I knocked.
The knock was feminine.
It was Shallan.
Did you knock with one hand or two?
I'm carrying a storming platter of food. For you, by the way. Of course the knock was one-handed. And seriously, who knocks with two?
It was quite feminine, then. I'd have thought that imitating a woman to catch a glimpse of a young lady in her undergarments was beneath you, Adeline Cullen.
Oh, for damnation's sake, Shallan. Can I come in now? And just so we're clear, I'm a man, and you're betrothed. My name is Adeline Cullen. I was born under the sign of the Nine, I have a birthmark on the back of my left thigh, and I had crab curry for breakfast. Anything else you need to know?
She poked her head out, pulling the cloth tight around her neck. Back of your left thigh, eh? What's a girl got to do to sneak a glimpse of that?
Knock like a man, apparently.
She gave him a grin. Just a sec. This dress is being a pain. She ducked back into the room.
Yes, yes, take your time. I'm not standing out here holding a heavy platter of food, smelling it after having skipped dinner so I could dine with you.
It's good for you, Shallan said. Builds strength or something. Isn't that the sort of thing you do? Strangle rocks, stand on your head, throw boulders around?
Yes, I have quite my share of murdered rocks stuffed under my bed.
Shallan grabbed her dress with her teeth at the neck to pull it tight, helping with the buttons. Maybe.
What is it with women and their undergarments, anyway?
Adeline said, the platter clinking as some of the plates slid against one another.
I mean, that shift covers basically the same parts as a formal dress.
It's the decency of it, Shallan said around a mouthful of fabric. Besides, certain things have a tendency to poke out through a shift.
Still seems arbitrary to me.
Oh, and men aren't arbitrary about clothing? A uniform is basically the same as any other coat, right? Besides, aren't you the one who spends his afternoons searching through fashion folios? He chuckled and started a reply, but Shallan, finally dressed, swept back the sheet on her doorway. Adeline stood up from leaning against the wall of the corridor and took her in. Frazzled hair, dress that she had missed two buttons on, cheeks flushed. Then he grinned a dopey grin. Ash's eyes. He actually thought she was pretty. This wonderful, princely man actually liked being with her. She'd traveled to the ancient city of the Knights Radiant, but compared to Adeline's affection, all the sights of Urethiru were dun spheres. He liked her, and he brought her food. Do not find a way to screw this up, Shallan thought to herself as she took the books from under his arm. She stepped aside, letting him enter and set the platter on the floor.
Polona said you hadn't eaten, he said, and then she found out I'd skipped dinner,
So she sent you with a lot, Shallan said, inspecting the platter piled high with dishes, flatbreads, and shell food.
Yeah, Adeline said, standing and scratching at his head. I think it's a Herdazian thing.
Shallan hadn't realized how hungry she was. She'd been intending to get something at one of the taverns later tonight while prowling about wearing Vale's face. Those taverns had set up in the main market, despite Navani's attempts to send them elsewhere, and Sabariel's merchants had quite the stock to sell. Now that this was all before her, well, she didn't worry much about decorum as she settled down on the ground and started to spoon herself up a thin, watery curry with vegetables. Adeline remained standing. He did look sharp in that blue uniform, though admittedly she'd never really seen him in anything else. Birthmark on the thigh, eh? You'll have to sit on the ground, Shallan said. No chairs yet.
I just realized, he said. This is your bedroom.
And my drawing room, and my sitting room, and my dining room, and my Adolin says obvious things room. It's quite versatile, this room. Singular. Of mine. Why?
I'm just wondering if it's proper, he said.
Then actually blushed, which was adorable.
For us to be in here alone.
Now you're worried about propriety?
Well, I did recently get lectured about it.
That wasn't a lecture, Shallan said, taking a bite of food. The succulent tastes overwhelmed her mouth, bringing on that delightful sharp pain and mixing of flavor that you only got from the first bite of something sweet. She closed her eyes and smiled, savoring it.
So, not a lecture? Adolin said. Was there to be more to that quip?
Sorry, she said, opening her eyes. It wasn't a lecture. It was a creative application of my tongue to keep you distracted. Looking at his lips, she could think of some other creative applications for her tongue.
Right. She took a deep breath.
It would be inappropriate, Shallan said, if we were alone. Fortunately, we are not.
Your ego doesn't count as a separate individual, Shallan.
Ha, wait. You think I have an ego?
It just sounded good. I don't mean...
Not that. Why are you grinning? Sorry, Shallan said, making two fists before herself and shivering in glee. She'd spent so long feeling timid. It was so satisfying to hear a reference to her confidence. It was working. Yasna's teaching about practicing and acting like she was in control.
It was working.
Well, except for that whole part about having to admit to herself that she'd killed her mother. As soon as she thought of it, she instinctively tried to shove the memory away, but it wouldn't budge. She'd spoken it to Pattern as a truth, which were the odd ideals of the Lightweavers. It was stuck in her mind, and every time she thought about it, the gaping wound flared up with pain again. Shallan had killed her mother. Her father had covered it up, pretended he'd murdered his wife, and the event had destroyed his life, driving him to anger and destruction. Until eventually Shallan had killed him, too.
Shallan? Adolin asked. Are you well?
No. Sure, fine. Anyway, we aren't alone. Pattern, come here, please. She held out her hand, palm up. He reluctantly moved down from the wall where he'd been watching. As always, he made a ripple in whatever he crossed. Be it cloth or stone, like there was something under the surface. His complex, fluctuating pattern of lines was always changing, melding, vaguely circular, but with surprising tangents. He crossed up her dress and onto her hand, then split out from beneath her skin and rose into the air, expanding fully into three dimensions. He hovered there, a black, eye-bending network of shifting lines, some patterns shrinking while others expanded, rippling across his surface like a field of moving grass. She would not hate him. She could hate the sword she'd used to kill her mother, but not him. She managed to push aside the pain for now, not forgetting it, but hopefully not letting it spoil her time with Adolin. Prince Adolin, Shallan said, I believe you've heard my friend's voice before. Let me introduce you formally. This is Pattern. Adolin knelt, reverent, and stared at the mesmerizing geometries. Shallan didn't blame him. She'd lost herself more than once in that network of lines and shapes that almost seemed to repeat, but never quite did.
Your Spren, Adolin said. A Shallan Spren.
Pattern sniffed in annoyance at that. He's called a cryptic, she said. Every order of Radiant bonds a different variety of Spren, and that bond lets me do what I do.
Craft illusions, Adolin said softly. Like that one with the map the other day.
Shallan smiled, and, realizing she had just a smidge of stormlight left from her illusion earlier, was unable to resist showing off. She raised her sleeved safe hand and breathed out, sending a shimmering patch of stormlight above the blue cloth. It formed into a small image of Adolin from her sketches of him in his shard plate. This one remained frozen, shard blade on his shoulder, face plate up, like a little doll.
This is an incredible talent, Shallan, Adolin said, poking at the version of himself, which fuzzed, offering no resistance. He paused, then poked at Pattern, who shied back.
Why do you insist on hiding this, pretending that you're a different order than you are?
Well, she said, thinking fast, and closing her hand, dismissing the image of Adolin. I just think it might give us an edge. Sometimes secrets are important.
Adolin nodded slowly. Yeah. Yeah, they are.
Anyway, Shallan said, Pattern, you're to be our chaperone tonight.
What? Pattern said with a hum. Is a chaperone?
That is someone who watches two young people when they are together to make certain they don't do anything inappropriate.
Inappropriate? Pattern said. Such as dividing by zero?
What? Shallan asked, looking to Adolin, who shrugged. Look, just keep an eye on us. It will be all right. Pattern hummed, melting down into his two-dimensional form and taking up residence on the side of a bowl. He seemed content there, like a Kremlin snuggled into its crack. Unable to wait any longer, Shallan dug into her meal. Adolin settled down across from her and attacked his own food. For a time, Shallan ignored her pain and savored the moment. Good food, good company, the setting sun casting ruby and topaz light across the mountains and into the room. She felt like drawing this scene, but knew it was the type of moment she couldn't capture on a page. It wasn't about content or composition, but the pleasure of living. The trick to happiness wasn't in freezing every momentary pleasure and clinging to each one, but in ensuring one's life would produce many future moments to anticipate. Adolin, after finishing an entire plate of Strana Haspers steamed in the shell, picked out a few chunks of pork from a creamy red curry, then put them on a plate and handed them in her direction.
Want to try a bite?
Shallan made a gagging noise.
Come on, he said, wagging the plate. It's delicious.
It would burn my lips off, Adolin Colin, Shallan said. Don't think I didn't notice you picking the absolute spiciest concoction Polona sent. Men's food is dreadful. How can you taste anything beneath all that spice?
Keeps it from being bland, Adolin said, stabbing one of the chunks and popping it in his mouth. There's nobody here but us. You can try it.
She eyed it, remembering the times as a child when she'd sneaked tastes of men's food, though not this specific dish. Pattern buzzed.
Is this the inappropriate thing I'm supposed to stop you from doing?
No, Shallan said, and Pattern settled back down. Perhaps a chaperone, she thought, who believes basically everything I tell him isn't going to be the most effective. Still, with a sigh, she grabbed a chunk of the pork in some flatbread. She had left Yaakoved hunting new experiences, after all. She tried a bite, and was given immediate reason to regret her decisions in life. Eyes brimming with tears, she scrambled for the cup of water Adolin, insufferably, had picked up to hand toward her. She gulped that down, though it didn't seem to do anything. She followed it by wiping her tongue with a napkin, in the most feminine way possible, of course. I hate you, she said, drinking his water next. Adolin chuckled.
Oh! Pattern said suddenly, bursting up from the bowl to hover in the air. You were talking about mating. I'm to make sure you don't accidentally mate, as mating is forbidden by human society until you have first performed appropriate rituals. Yes, yes. Dictates of custom require following certain patterns before you copulate. I've been studying this.
Oh, Stormfather, Shallan said, covering her eyes with her free hand. A few shame-spren even peeked in for a glimpse before vanishing. Twice in 1 week.
Very well, you two, Pattern said. No mating. No mating!
He hummed to himself as if pleased, then sank down onto a plate.
Well, that was humiliating, Shallan said. Can we maybe talk about those books you brought? Or ancient Vorin theology? Or strategies for counting grains of sand? Anything other than what just happened, please?
Adolin chuckled, then reached for a slim notebook that was on top of the pile. May Aladar sent teams to question Vedekar Peril's family and friends. They discovered where he was before he died, who last saw him, and wrote down anything suspicious. I thought we could read the report. And the rest of the books?
You seemed lost when Father asked you about Makabaki politics, Adolin said, pouring some wine, merely a soft yellow. So I asked around, and it seems that some of the Ardents hauled their entire libraries out here. I was able to get a servant to locate you a few books I'd enjoyed on the Makabaki.
Books? Shallan said.
You? I don't spend all my time hitting people with swords, Shallan, Adolin said. Yasna and Aunt Navani made very certain that my youth was filled with interminable periods spent listening to Ardents lecture me on politics and trade. Some of it stuck in my brain, against my natural inclinations. Those three books are the best of the ones I remember having read to me, though the last one is an updated version. I thought it might help.
That's thoughtful, she said. Really, Adolin. Thank you.
I figured, you know, if we're going to move forward with the betrothal.
Why wouldn't we?
Shallan said, suddenly panicked. I don't know. You're a radiant, Shallan. Some kind of half-divine being from mythology. And all along I was thinking we were giving you a favorable match.
He stood up and started pacing.
Damnation. I didn't mean to say it like that. I'm sorry. I keep worrying that I'm going to screw this up somehow.
You worry you're going to screw it up? Shallan said, feeling a warmth inside that wasn't completely due to the wine.
I'm not good with relationships, Shallan.
Is there anyone who actually is? I mean, is there really someone out there who looks at relationships and thinks, you know what, I've got this? Personally, I rather think we're all collectively idiots about it.
It's worse for me.
Adolin, dear, the last man I had a romantic interest in was not only an Ardent, forbidden to court me in the first place, but also turned out to be an assassin who was merely trying to obtain my favor so he could get close to Yasna. I think you overestimate everyone else's capability in this regard.
He stopped pacing. An assassin?
Seriously, Shallan said. He almost killed me with a loaf of poisoned bread.
Wow. I have to hear this story.
Fortunately, I just told it to you. His name was Capsal, and he was so incredibly sweet to me that I can almost forgive him for trying to kill me.
Adolin grinned. Well, it's nice to hear that I don't have a high bar to jump. All I have to do is not poison you. Though you shouldn't be telling me about past lovers. You'll make me jealous.
Please, Shallan said, dipping her bread in some leftover sweet curry. Her tongue still hadn't recovered. You've courted like half the war camps.
It's not that bad.
Isn't it? From what I hear, I'd have to go to Herdaz to find an eligible woman you haven't pursued. She held out her hand to him to help her to her feet.
Are you mocking my failings?
No, I'm lauding them, she said, standing up beside him. You see, Adeline, dear, if you hadn't wrecked all those other relationships, you wouldn't be here, with me. She pulled close. And so, in reality, you're the greatest at relationships there ever was. You ruined only the wrong ones, you see. He leaned down. His breath smelled of spices. His uniform of the crisp, clean starch Dalinar required. His lips touched hers, and her heart fluttered. So warm.
No mating!
She started, pulling out of the kiss-defined pattern hovering beside them, pulsing quickly through shapes. Adeline bellowed a laugh, and Shallan couldn't help joining in at the ridiculousness of it. She stepped back from him, but kept hold on his hand. Neither of us is going to mess this up, she said to him, squeezing his hand. Despite what might at times seem like our best efforts otherwise.
Promise? He asked.
I promise. Let's look at this notebook of yours and see what it says about our murderer.
14. Squires can't capture. In this record, I hold nothing back. I will try not to shy away from difficult topics or paint myself in a dishonestly heroic light. From Oathbringer, Preface. Kaladin crept through the rains, sidling in a wet uniform across the rocks until he was able to peek through the trees at the Voidbringers. Monstrous terrors from the mythological past, enemies of all that was right and good, destroyers who had laid waste to civilization countless times. They were playing cards. What in damnation's depths? Kaladin thought. The Voidbringers had posted a single guard, but the creature had simply been sitting on a tree stump, easy to avoid. A decoy, Kaladin had assumed, figuring he would find the true guard watching from the heights of the trees. If there was a hidden guard, though, Kaladin had missed spotting them, and they'd missed Kaladin in equal measure. The dim light served him well as he was able to settle between some bushes right at the edge of the Voidbringer camp. Between trees they had stretched tarps, which leaked horribly. In one place they'd made a proper tent, fully enclosed with walls, and he couldn't see what was inside. There wasn't enough shelter, so many sat out in the rain. Kaladin spent a torturous few minutes expecting to be spotted. All they had to do was notice that these bushes had drawn in their leaves at his touch. Nobody looked, fortunately. The leaves timidly peeked back out, obscuring him. Syl landed on his arm, hands on her hips as she surveyed the Voidbringers. One of them had a set of wooden Hardassian cards, and he sat at the edge of the camp, directly before Kaladin, using a flat surface of stone as a table. A female sat opposite him. They looked different from what he expected. For one thing, their skin was a different shade. Many parchmen here in Alethkar had marbled white and red skin, rather than the deep red on black, like Relaine from Bridge 4. They didn't wear war form, though neither did they wear some terrible, powerful form. Though they were squat and bulky, their only carapace ran along the sides of their forearms and jutted out at their temples, leaving them with full heads of hair. They still wore their simple slave smocks, tied at the waists with strings. No red eyes. Did that change, perhaps, like his own eyes? The male, distinguished by a dark red beard, the hairs each unnaturally thick, finally placed a card in the rock next to several others.
"Can you do that?" the female asked. "I think so. You said squires can't capture, unless another card of mine is touching yours," the male said.
He scratched at his beard.
"I think..."
Kaladin felt cold, like the rainwater was seeping in through his skin, penetrating all the way to his blood and washing through him. They spoke like a Lethi, not a hint of an accent. With his eyes closed, he wouldn't have been able to tell these voices from those of common dark-eyed villagers from Hearthstone,
save for the fact that the female had a deeper voice than most human women.
So, the female said, you're saying you don't know how to play the game after all?
The male began gathering up the cards.
I should know, Ken. How many times did I watch them play? Standing there with my tray of drinks? I should be an expert at this, shouldn't I? Apparently not.
The female stood and walked over to another group who were trying to build a fire under a tarp without much success. It took a special kind of luck to be able to get flames going outside during the weeping. Kaladin, like most in the military, had learned to live with a constant dampness. They had the stolen sacks of grain. Kaladin could see them piled underneath one of the tarps. The grain had swollen, splitting several of the sacks. Several were eating soggy handfuls since they had no bowls. Kaladin wished he didn't immediately taste the mushy, awful stuff in his own mouth. He'd been given unspiced, boiled talu on many occasions. Often he'd considered it a blessing. The male who'd been speaking continued to sit on his rock, holding up a wooden card. They were a lacquered set, durable. Kaladin had occasionally seen their like in the military. Men would save for months to get a set like this that wouldn't warp in the rain. The parchman looked so forlorn, staring down at his card, shoulders slumped.
This is wrong, Kaladin whispered to Syl. We've been so wrong.
Where were the destroyers? What had happened to the beasts with the red eyes that had tried to crush Dalinar's army? The terrible, haunting figures that Bridge Four had described to him?
We thought we understood what was going to happen, Kaladin thought. I was so sure.
Alarm! A sudden shrill voice called. Alarm, you fools!
Something zipped through the air, a glowing yellow ribbon, a streak of light in the dim afternoon shade.
He's there! The shrill voice said. You're being watched! Beneath those shrubs!
Kaladin burst up through the underbrush, ready to suck in Stormlight and be away. Though fewer towns had any now, as it was running out again, he had a little left. The parchman seized cudgels made from branches or the handles of brooms. They bunched together and held the sticks like frightened villagers. No stance, no control. Kaladin hesitated.
I could take them all in a fight even without Stormlight.
He'd seen men hold weapons like that many times before. Most recently, he'd seen it inside the chasms when training the bridgemen. These were no warriors. Syl flitted up to him, prepared to become a blade.
No, Kaladin whispered to her.
Then he held his hands to the sides, speaking more loudly.
I surrender.
15. Brightness Radiant. I will express only direct, even brutal truth. You must know what I have done, and what those actions cost me. From Oathbringer, Preface. Bright Lord Peril's body was found in the same area as Sadius's, Shallan said, pacing back and forth in her room as she flipped through pages of the report. That can't be a coincidence. This tower is far too big. So we know where the murderer is prowling.
Yeah, I suppose, Adolin said.
He lounged with his back against the wall, coat unbuttoned, while tossing a small leather ball filled with dried grain into the air and catching it again.
I just think the murders could have been done by two different people.
Same exact method of murder, Shallan said. Body positioned the same way.
Nothing else connecting them, Adolin said. Sadius was slime, widely hated, and usually accompanied by guards. Peril was quiet, well-liked, and known for his administrative prowess. He was less a soldier than a manager.
The sun had fully set by now, and they'd set out spheres on the floor for light. The remnants of their meal had been carted away by a servant, and Pattern hummed happily on the wall near Adolin's head. Adolin glanced at him occasionally, looking uncomfortable, which she fully understood. She'd grown used to Pattern, but his lines were strange. Wait until Adolin sees a cryptic in Shadesmar form, she thought, with a full body but twisting shapes for his head. Adolin tossed the little stitched ball into the air and caught it with his right hand, the one that Renarin amazingly had healed. She wasn't the only one practicing with her powers. She was especially glad someone else had a shard blade now. When the high storms returned, and they began working the Oathgate in earnest, she'd have help. These reports, Shallan said, tapping the notebook against her hand, are both informative and useless. Nothing connects Peril and Sadeus, save their both being light eyes, that and the part of the tower they were in. Perhaps mere opportunity drove the killer's choice of victims.
You're saying someone happened to kill a high prince, Adolin said. By accident? Like a back-alley murder outside a pub?
Maybe. Brightness Aladar suggests in here that your father lay down some rules on people moving alone through empty parts of the tower.
I still think there might be two murderers, Adolin said. You know, like someone saw Sadeus dead and figured they could get away with killing someone else, blaming it on the first fellow.
Oh, Adolin, Shallan thought. He'd arrived at a theory he liked, and now wouldn't let it go. It was a common mistake, warned of in her scientific books. Adolin did have one point. A high prince being murdered was unlikely to be random chance. There were no signs of Sadeus's shard blade, Oathbringer, being used by anyone. Not even a rumor of it. Maybe the second death is a kind of decoy, Shallan thought, riffling through the report again. An attempt to make it seem like random attacks? No, that was too convoluted, and she had no more evidence for it than Adolin had for his theory. That did leave her thinking. Maybe everyone was paying attention to these two deaths because they'd happened to important light eyes. Could there be other deaths they hadn't noticed because they'd happened to less prominent individuals? If a beggar had been found in Adolin's proverbial back alley behind a pub, would anyone have remarked upon it, even if he'd been stabbed through the eye? I need to get out there among them and see what I can find. She opened her mouth to tell him she should probably turn in, but he was already standing, stretching.
I think we've done what we can with that, he said, nodding toward the report. At least for tonight.
Yeah, Shallan said, feigning a yawn. Probably.
So, Adolin said, then took a deep breath. There's something else.
Shallan frowned. Something else? Why did he suddenly look like he was preparing to do something difficult? He's going to break off our betrothal, a part of her mind thought, though she pounced on that emotion and shoved it back behind the curtains where it belonged.
Okay. This isn't easy, Adolin said. I don't want to offend Shallan, but you know how I had you eat that man's food?
Yes. If my tongue is particularly spicy in the coming days, I blame you.
Shallan, there's something similar that we need to talk about. Something about you we can't just ignore.
I killed my parents. I stabbed my mother through the chest and I strangled my father while singing to him.
You, Adolin said, have a shard blade.
I didn't want to kill her. I had to. I had to.
Adolin grabbed her by the shoulders and she started, focusing on him. He was grinning.
You have a shard blade, Shallan! A new one!
That's incredible! I dreamed for years of earning my blade. So many men spend their lives with that very dream and never see it fulfilled. And here you have one.
And that's a good thing, right? She said, held in his grip with arms pulled tight against her body.
Of course it is, Adolin said, letting go of her. But, I mean, you're a woman.
Was it the makeup that tipped you off? Or the dress? Oh, It was the breasts, wasn't it? Always giving us away.
Shallan, this is serious.
I know, she said, calming her nerves. Yes. Pattern can become a shard blade, Adolin. I don't see what this has to do with anything. I can't give it away. Stormfather, you want to teach me how to use it, don't you?
He grinned. You said that Jasnah was a Radiant too. Women, gaining shard blades. It's weird, but it's not like we can ignore it. What about plate? Do you have that hidden somewhere too?
Not that I know of, she said. Her heart was beating quickly, her skin growing cold, her muscles tense. She fought against the sensation. I don't know where plate comes from.
I know it's not feminine, but who cares? You've got a sword. You should know how to use it. And custom can go to damnation. There, I said it.
He took a deep breath.
I mean, the bridge boy can have one, and he's dark-eyed. Well, he was. Anyway, it's not so different from that.
Thank you, Shallan thought, for ranking all women as something equivalent to peasants. But she held her tongue. This was obviously an important moment for Adolin, and he was trying to be broad-minded. But thinking of what she'd done pained her. Holding the weapon would be worse. So much worse. She wanted to hide, but she couldn't. This truth refused to budge from her mind. Could she explain?
So, you're right, but...
Great! Adolin said. Great! I brought the blade guards so we won't hurt each other. I stashed them back at the guard post. I'll go fetch them.
He was out the door a moment later. Shallan stood with her hand stretched toward him, objections dying on her lips. She curled her fingers up and brought her hand to her breast, her heart thundering within.
Pattern said. This is good. This needs to be done.
Shallan scrambled through the room to the small mirror she'd hung from the wall. She stared at herself, eyes wide, hair an utter mess. She'd started breathing in sharp, quick gasps.
I can't, she said. I can't be this person, Pattern. I can't just wield the sword. Some brilliant knight on a tower pretending she should be followed.
Pattern hummed softly a tone she'd come to recognize as confusion. The bewilderment of one species trying to comprehend the mind of another. Sweat trickled down Shallan's face, running beside her eye as she stared at herself. What did she expect to see? The thought of breaking down in front of Adolin heightened her tension. Her every muscle grew taut, and the corners of her vision started to darken. She could see only before herself, and she wanted to run, go somewhere. Be away. No, just be someone else. Hands shaking, she scrambled over and dug out her drawing pad. She ripped pages, flinging them out of the way to reach an empty one, then seized her charcoal pencil. Pattern moved over to her, a floating ball of shifting lines, buzzing in concern.
Shallan, please, what is wrong?
I can hide, Shallan thought, drawing at a frenzied pace. Shallan can flee and leave someone in her place.
It's because you hate me, Pattern said softly. I can die, Shallan. I can go. They will send you another to bond.
A high-pitched whine started to rise in the room, one Shallan didn't immediately recognize as coming from the back of her own throat. Pattern's words were like knives to her side.
No, please, just draw.
Veil. Veil would be fine holding a sword. She didn't have Shallan's broken soul and hadn't killed her parents. She'd be able to do this.
No, what would Adolin do if he returned and found a completely different woman in the room? He couldn't know of Veil.
The lines she sketched, ragged and unrefined from the shaking pencil, quickly took the shape of her own face. But hair in a bun. A poised woman. Not as flighty as Shallan. Not as unintentionally silly. A woman who hadn't been sheltered. A woman hard enough, strong enough to wield this sword. A woman like Jasnah. Yes, Jasnah's subtle smile, composure, and self-confidence. Shallan outlined her own face with these ideals, creating a harder version of it. Could she be this woman? I have to be, Shallan thought, drawing in stormlight from her satchel, then breathing it out in a puff around her. She stood up as the change took hold. Her heartbeat slowed, and she wiped the sweat from her brow, then calmly undid her safe hand sleeve, tossed aside the foolish extra pouch she'd tied around her hand inside, then rolled the sleeve back to expose her still-gloved hand. Good enough. Adeline couldn't possibly expect her to put on sparring clothing. She pulled her hair back into a bun and fixed it in place with hair spikes from her satchel. When Adeline returned to the room a moment later, he found a poised, calm woman who wasn't quite Shallan Devar. Brightness Radiant is her name, she thought. She will go only by title. Adeline carried two long, thin pieces of metal that somehow could meld to the front of shard blades and make them less dangerous for use in sparring. Radiant inspected them with a critical eye, then held her hand to the side, summoning pattern. The blade formed, a long, thin weapon nearly as tall as she was. Pattern, she said, can modulate his shape and will dull his edge to safe levels. I shan't need such a clunky device. Indeed, Pattern's edge rippled, dulling. Storms, that's handy. I'll still need one, though. Adeline summoned his own blade, a process that took him 10 heartbeats, during which he turned his head, looking at her. Shallan glanced down, realizing that she'd enhanced her bust in this guise. Not for him, of course. She'd just been making herself look more like Jasnah. Adeline's sword finally appeared, with a thicker blade than her own, sinuous along the sharp edge, with delicate crystalline ridges along the back. He put one of the guards on the sword's edge. Radiant put one foot forward, blade lifted high in two hands beside her head. Hey, Adeline said. That's not bad. Shallan did spend quite a lot of time drawing you all. Adeline nodded thoughtfully. He approached and reached toward her with a thumb and two fingers. She thought he was going to adjust her grip, but instead he pressed his fingers against her collarbone and shoved lightly. Radiant stumbled backward, almost tripping. A stance, Adeline said, is about more than just looking great on the battlefield. It's about footing, center of balance, and control of the fight. Noted. So how do I make it better? I'm trying to decide. Everyone I've worked with before had been using a sword since their youth. I'm wondering how Zael would have changed my training if I'd never even picked up a weapon. From what I've heard of him, Radiant said, it will depend on whether there are any convenient rooftops nearby to jump off. That's how he trained with plate, Adeline said. This is blade. Should I teach you dueling? Or should I teach you how to fight in an army? I shall settle, Radiant said, for knowing how to avoid cutting off any of my own appendages, Bright Lord Colin. Bright Lord Colin? Too formal. Right. That was how Radiant would act, of course. But she could allow herself some familiarity. Jasnah had done that. I was merely, Radiant said, attempting to show the respect due a master from his humble pupil. Adeline chuckled. Please, we don't need that. But here, let's see what we can do about that stance. Over the next hour, Adeline positioned her hands, her feet, and her arms 12 times over, He picked a basic stance for her that she could eventually adapt into several of the formal stances, the ones like wind stance, which Adolin said wouldn't rely on strength or reach as much as mobility and skill. She wasn't certain why he'd bothered fetching the metal sparring sleeves, as the two of them didn't exchange any blows. Other than correcting her stance 10,000 times, he spoke about the art of the duel. How to treat your shard blade, how to think of an opponent, how to show respect to the institutions and traditions of the duel itself. Some of it was very practical. Shard blades were dangerous weapons, which explained the demonstrations on how to hold hers, how to walk with it, how to take care not to slice people or things while casually turning. Other parts of his monologue were more mystical. "The blade is part of you," Adolin said. "The blade is more than your tool. It is your life. Respect it. It will not fail you. If you are bested, it is because you failed the sword." Radiant stood in what felt like a very stiff pose, blade held before herself in two hands. She'd only scraped pattern on the ceiling two or three times. Fortunately, most of the rooms in Urethiru had high ceilings. Adolin gestured for her to perform a simple strike, as they'd been practicing. Radiant raised both arms, tilting the sword, then took a step forward while bringing it down. The entire angle of movement couldn't have been more than 90 degrees, barely a strike at all. Adolin smiled. "You're catching it. A few thousand more of those and it will start to feel natural. We'll have to work on your breathing, though." "My breathing?" He nodded absently. "Adolin," Radiant said, "I assure you I have been breathing without fail my entire life." "Yeah," he said. "That's why you're going to have to unlearn it." "How I stand, how I think, how I breathe. I have trouble distinguishing what is actually relevant and what is part of the subculture and superstition of swordsmen." "It's all relevant," Adolin said. "Eating chicken before a match?" Adolin grinned. "Well, maybe some things are personal quirks. But the swords are part of us." "I know mine is part of me," Radiant said, resting the blade at her side and setting her gloved safe hand on it. "I've bonded it. I suspect this is the origin of the tradition among shard-bearers."
"So academic," Adolin said, shaking his head. "You need to feel this, Shallan. Live it."
That would not have been a difficult task for Shallan. Radiant, however, preferred not to feel things she hadn't considered in depth beforehand. "Have you considered," she said, "that your shard blade was once a living spren, wielded by one of the knights radiant? Doesn't that change how you look at it?" Adolin glanced toward his blade, which he'd left summoned, strapped with the sheath, and set across her blankets.
"I've always kind of known. Not that it was alive. That's silly. Swords aren't alive. I mean, I've always known there was something special about them. It's part of being a duelist, I think. We all know it."
She let the matter drop. Swordsmen, from what she'd seen, were superstitious, as were sailors, as were, well, basically everyone but scholars like Radiant and Jasnah. It was curious to her how much of Adolin's rhetoric about blades and dueling reminded her of religion. How strange that these Alethi often treated their actual religion so flippantly. In Yakeved, Shallan had spent hours painting lengthy passages from the arguments. You'd speak the words out loud over and over, committing them to memory while kneeling or bowing, before finally burning the paper. The Alethi instead preferred to let the Ardents deal with the Almighty, like he was some annoying parlor guest who could be safely distracted by servants offering a particularly tasty tea. Adolin let her do some more strikes, perhaps sensing that she was growing tired of having her stance constantly adjusted. As she was swinging,
He grabbed his own blade and fell in beside her, modeling the stance and the strikes. After a short time of that, she dismissed her blade, then picked up her sketchbook. She quickly flipped past the drawing of Radiant and started to sketch Adolin in his stance. She was forced to let some of Radiant bleed away. "No, stand there," Shallan said, pointing at Adolin with her charcoal. "Yes, like that." She sketched out the stance, then nodded. "Now strike, and hold the last position." He did so. By now he'd removed his jacket, standing in only shirt and trousers. She did like how that tight shirt fit him. Even Radiant would admire that. She wasn't dead, just pragmatic. She looked over the two sketches, then resummoned pattern and fell into position. "Hey, nice," Adolin said, as Radiant performed the next few strikes. "Yeah, you've got it." He again fell in beside her. The simple attack he'd taught her was obviously a poor test of his skills, but he executed it with precision nonetheless, then grinned and started talking about the first few lessons he'd had with Zael long ago. His blue eyes were alight, and Shallan loved seeing that glow from him, almost like stormlight. She knew that passion. She'd felt what it was to be alive with interest, to be consumed by something so fully that you lost yourself in the wonder of it. For her it was art, but watching him, she thought that the two of them weren't so different. Sharing these moments with him and drinking of his excitement felt special, intimate, even more so than their closeness had been earlier in the evening. She let herself be Shallan in some of the moments, but whenever the pain of holding the sword started to spike, whenever she really thought about what she was doing, she was able to become Radiant and avoid it. She was genuinely reluctant to see the time end, so she let it stretch into the late evening, well past when she should have called a halt. At long last, Shallan bade a tired, sweaty farewell to Adolin and watched him trot down the strata-lined hallway outside, a spring to his step, a lamp in his hand, blade guards held on his shoulder. Shallan would have to wait another night to visit taverns and hunt for answers. She trailed back into her room, strangely contented for all that the world might be in the middle of ending. That night she slept, for once, in peace.
16. Wrapped three times. For in this comes the lesson. From Oathbringer, Preface. A legend rested on the stone slab before Dalinar, a weapon pulled from the ancient mists of time, and said to have been forged during the shadow days by the hand of God himself. The blade of the assassin in white, claimed by Caladan Stormblessed during their clash above the storm. Upon cursory inspection, it was indistinguishable from an ordinary shard blade. Elegant, relatively small in that it was barely 5 feet long, it was thin and curved like a tusk. It had patterns only at the base of the blade, near the hilt. He'd lit it with four diamond bromes, placed at the corners of the altar-like stone slab. This small room had no strata or paintings on the walls, so the stormlight lit only him and that alien blade. It did have one oddity. There was no gemstone. Gemstones were what allowed men to bond to shard blades, often affixed at the pommel, though occasionally at the spot where hilt met blade, the gem would flash when you first touched it, initiating the process. Keep the blade with you for a week, and the blade became yours, dismissible and returnable in time with your heartbeat. This blade didn't have one. Dalinar hesitantly reached out and rested his fingers on its silvery length. It was warm to the touch, like something alive. "It doesn't scream when I touch it," he noted. "The knights," the Stormfather said in his head, "broke their oaths.
They abandoned everything they'd sworn, and in so doing killed their Spren. Other blades are the corpses of those Spren, which is why they scream at your touch. This weapon, instead, was made directly from Honor's soul, then given to the heralds. It is also the mark of an oath, but a different type, and does not have the mind to scream on its own. And Shardplate? Dalinar asked. Related, but different, the Stormfather rumbled. You haven't spoken the oaths required to know more. You cannot break oaths, Dalinar said, fingers still resting on the honor blade. Right? I cannot. What of the thing we fight, Odium? The origin of the Voidbringers and their Spren. Can he break oaths? No, the Stormfather said. He is far greater than I, but the power of ancient Adenalsium permeates him and controls him. Odium is a force like pressure, gravitation, or the movement of time. These things cannot break their own rules, nor can he.
Dalinar tapped the honor blade, a fragment of honor's own soul, crystallized into metallic form. In a way, the death of their god gave him hope. For if honor had fallen, surely Odium could as well. In visions, honor had left Dalinar with a task.
Vex Odium. Convince him that he can lose and appoint a champion. He will take that chance instead of risking defeat again, as he has suffered so often. This is the best advice I can give you.
I've seen that the enemy is preparing a champion, Dalinar said. A dark creature with red eyes and 9 shadows. Will Honor's suggestion work? Can I make Odium agree to a decisive contest between me and that champion?
Of course Honor's suggestion would work, the Stormfather said. He spoke it.
I mean, Dalinar said, why would it work? Why would this Odium ever agree to a contest of champions? It seems too momentous a matter to risk on something so small and inferior as the prowess and will of men.
Your enemy is not a man like you, the Stormfather replied, voice rumbling, thoughtful, even frightened. He does not age. He feels. He is angry. But this does not change, and his rage does not cool. Epochs can pass, and he will remain the same. To fight directly might coax out forces that could hurt him, as he has been hurt before. Those scars do not heal. To pick a champion, then lose, will only cost him time. He has that in plenitude. He still will not agree easily, but it is possible he will agree, if presented with the option in the right moment, the right way. Then he will be bound. And we win time, the Stormfather said, which, though dross to him, is the most valuable thing a man can have.
Dalinar slipped the honor blade off the slab. At the side of the room, a shaft cut into the ground. 2 feet wide, it was one of many strange holes, corridors, and hidden corners they'd found in the Tower City. This one was probably part of a sewage system. Judging by the rust on the edges of the hole, there had once been a metal pipe here connecting the stone hole in the floor to one in the ceiling. One of Navani's primary concerns was figuring out how all this worked. For now, they'd gotten by using wooden frames to turn certain large communal rooms with ancient baths into privies. Once they had more stormlight, their soulcasters could deal with the waste as they'd done in the war camps. Navani found the system inelegant. Communal privies with sometimes long lines made for an inefficient city, and she claimed that these tubes indicated a widespread piping and sanitation system.
It was exactly the sort of large-scale civic project that engaged her. He'd never known anyone to get as excited by sewage as Navani Kolin. For now, this tube was empty. Dalinar knelt and lowered the sword into the hole, sliding it into a stone sheath he'd cut in the side. The upper lip of the hole shielded the protruding hilt from sight. You'd have to reach down and feel in the hole to find the honor blade. He stood up, then gathered his spheres and made his way out. He hated leaving it there, but he could think of nothing safer. His rooms didn't feel secure enough yet. He had no vault, and a crowd of guards would only draw attention. Beyond Kaladin, Navani, and the Stormfather himself, nobody even knew that Dalinar had this. If he masked his movements, there was virtually no chance of the blade being discovered in this vacant portion of the tower.
"What will you do with it?" the Stormfather asked as Dalinar entered the empty corridors. "It is a weapon beyond parallel, the gift of a god. With it you would be a Windrunner unoathed, and more. More that men do not understand and cannot. Like a herald, nearly." "All the more reason," Dalinar said, "to think very carefully before using it. Though I wouldn't mind if you kept an eye on it for me." The Stormfather actually laughed. "You think I can see all things? I kind of assumed, the map we made. I see what is left out in the storms, and that darkly. I am no god, Dalinar Kolin. No more than your shadow on the wall is you."
Dalinar reached the steps downward, then wound around and around, holding a broom for light. If Captain Kaladin didn't return soon, the Honor Blade would provide another means of windrunning, a way to get to Thalen City or Aesir at speed, or to get Elikar's team to Kolinar. The Stormfather had also confirmed it could work oath gates, which might prove handy. Dalinar reached more inhabited sections of the tower, which bustled with movement. A chef's assistants hauling supplies from the storage dump right inside the tower gates, a couple of men painting lines on the floor to guide, families of soldiers in a particularly wide hallway, sitting on boxes along the wall and watching children roll wooden spheres down a slope into a room that had probably been another bath. Life. Such an odd place to make a home, yet they'd transformed the barren, shattered plains into one. This tower wouldn't be so different, assuming they could keep farming operations going on the shattered plains, and assuming they had enough stormlight to keep those oath gates working. He was the odd man out, holding a sphere. Guards patrolled with lanterns, the cooks worked by lamp oil, but their stores were starting to run low. The women watching children and darning socks used only the light of a few windows along the wall here. Dalinar passed near his rooms. Today's guard, Spearman from Bridge 13, waited outside. He waved for them to follow him.
"Is all well, Bright Lord?" one asked, catching up quickly.
He spoke with a slow drawl, a Koran accent, from near the Sunmaker Mountains in central Alethkar.
"Fine," Dalinar said tersely, trying to determine the time. How long had he spent speaking with the Stormfather?
"Good, good," the guard said, spear held lightly to his shoulder.
"Wouldn't want anything to have happened to you while you were out, alone, in the corridors, when you said nobody should be going about alone."
Dalinar eyed the man. Clean-shaven, he was a little pale for an Alethi and had dark brown hair. Dalinar vaguely thought the man had shown up among his guards several times during the last week or so. He liked to roll a sphere across his knuckles in what Dalinar found to be a distracting way.
"Your name?" Dalinar asked as they walked.
"Ryle," the man said.
"Bridge 13.
The soldier raised a hand and gave a precise salute, so careful it could have been given by one of Dalinar's finest officers, except he maintained the same lazy expression.
"Well, Sergeant Ryle, I was not alone," Dalinar said.
Where did you get this habit of questioning officers?
It isn't a habit if you only do it once, Bright Lord.
And you've only ever done it once?
To you?
To anyone?
Well, Ryle said, those don't count, Bright Lord. I'm a new man, reborn in the bridge cruise.
Lovely. Well, Ryle, do you know what time it is? I have trouble telling in these storming corridors.
You could use the clock device Brightness Navani sent you, sir, Ryle said. I think that's what they're for, you know.
Dalinar affixed him with another glare.
Wasn't questioning you, sir, Ryle said. It wasn't a question. See,
Dalinar finally turned and stalked back down the corridor to his rooms.
Where was that package Navani had given him?
He found it on an end table, and from inside it removed a leather bracer somewhat like what an archer would wear. It had two clock faces set into the top. One showed the time with three hands, even seconds, as if that mattered. The other was a storm clock, which could be set to wind down to the next projected high storm.
How do they get it all so small? He wondered, shaking the device.
Set into the leather, it also had a pain reel, a gemstone fabrial that would take pain from him if he pressed his hand on it. Navani had been working on various forms of pain-related fabrials for use by surgeons, and had mentioned using him as a test subject. He strapped the device to his forearm, right above his wrist. It felt conspicuous there, wrapping around the outside of his uniform sleeve, but it had been a gift. In any case, he had an hour until his next scheduled meeting. Time to work out some of his restless energy. He collected his two guards, then made his way down a level to one of the larger chambers near where he housed his soldiers. The room had black and gray strata on the walls and was filled with men training. They all wore Colin blue, even if just an armband. For now, both Light Eyes and Dark practiced in the same chamber, sparring in rings with padded cloth mats. As always, the sounds and smells of sparring warmed Dalinar. Sweeter than the scent of flatbread baking was that of oiled leather. More welcoming than the sound of flutes was that of practice swords rapping against one another. Wherever he was and whatever station he obtained, a place like this would always be home. He found the swordmasters assembled at the back wall, seated on cushions and supervising their students. Save for one notable exception, they all had squared beards, shaved heads, and simple open-fronted robes that tied at the waist. Dalinar owned ardents who were experts in all manner of specialties, and per tradition, any man or woman could come to them and be apprenticed in a new skill or trade. The swordmasters, however, were his pride. Five of the six men rose and bowed to him. Dalinar turned to survey the room again. The smell of sweat, the clang of weapons. They were the signs of preparation. The world might be in chaos, but Alethkar prepared.
Not Alethkar, he thought. Eurythriu. My kingdom.
Storms, it was going to be difficult to accustom himself to that. He would always be a Lethi, but once Elokar's proclamation came out, Alethkar would no longer be his. He still hadn't figured out how to present that fact to his armies. He wanted to give Navani and her scribes time to work out the exact legalities.
You've done well here, Dalinar said to Kelerand, one of the swordmasters. Ask Ivis if she'd look at expanding the training quarters into adjacent chambers. I want you to keep the troops busy. I'm worried about them getting restless and starting more fights.
It will be done, Bright Lord, Kelerand said, bowing.
I'd like a spar myself, Dalinar said.
I shall find someone suitable, Bright Lord.
What about you, Kelerand? Dalinar said.
The swordmaster bested Dalinar 2 out of 3 times, and though Dalinar had given up delusions of someday becoming the better swordsman, he was a soldier, not a duelist. He liked the challenge.
I will, Kelerand said stiffly, of course do as my High Prince commands. Though if given a choice, I shall pass.
With all due respect, I don't feel that I would make a suitable match for you today.
Dalinar glanced toward the other standing swordmasters, who lowered their eyes. Swordmaster Ardens weren't generally like their more religious counterparts. They could be formal at times, but you could laugh with them. Usually. They were still Ardens, though.
Very well, Dalinar said. Find me someone to fight.
Though he'd intended it only as a dismissal of Kelerand, the other four joined him, leaving Dalinar. He sighed, leaning back against the wall, and glanced to the side. One man still lounged on his cushion. He wore a scruffy beard and clothing that seemed an afterthought. Not dirty, but ragged, belted with rope.
"Not offended by my presence, Zael?" Dalinar asked.
"I'm offended by everyone's presence. You're no more revolting than the rest, Mr. High Prince."
Dalinar settled down on a stool to wait.
"You didn't expect this?"
Zael said, sounding amused.
"No, I thought, well, they're fighting Ardents, swordsmen, soldiers at heart." "You're dangerously close to threatening them with a decision, Bright Lord. Choose between God and their High Prince. The fact that they like you doesn't make the decision easier, but more difficult."
"Their discomfort will pass," Dalinar said. "My marriage, though it seems dramatic now, will eventually be a mere trivial note in history."
"Perhaps."
"You disagree?"
"Every moment in our lives seems trivial," Zael said. "Most are forgotten, while some, equally humble, become the points upon which history pivots. Like white on black."
"White on black?" Dalinar asked.
"Figure of speech. I don't really care what you did, High Prince. Light-eyed self-indulgence or serious sacrilege, either way it doesn't affect me. But there are those who are asking how far you're going to end up straying."
Dalinar grunted. Honestly, had he expected Zael, of all people, to be helpful? He stood up and began to pace, annoyed at his own nervous energy. Before the Ardents could return with someone for him to duel, he stalked back into the middle of the room looking for soldiers he recognized. Men who wouldn't feel inhibited sparring with a High Prince. He eventually located one of General Kahl's sons. Not the shardbearer, Captain Hallam Kahl, but the next oldest son, a beefy man with a head that had always seemed a little too small for his body. He was stretching after some wrestling matches.
"Auriton," Dalinar said. "You ever sparred with a High Prince?"
The younger man turned, then immediately snapped to attention.
"Sir?"
"No need for formality. I'm just looking for a match."
"I'm not equipped for a proper duel, Bright Lord," he said. "Give me some time."
"No need," Dalinar said. "I'm fine for a wrestling match. It's been too long."
Some men would rather not spar with a man as important as Dalinar for fear of hurting him. Kahl had trained his sons better than that. The young man grinned, displaying a prominent gap in his teeth.
"Fine with me, Bright Lord. But I'll have you know, I've not lost a match in months."
"Good," Dalinar said. "I need a challenge."
The swordmasters finally returned as Dalinar, stripped to the waist, was pulling on a pair of sparring leggings over his undershorts. The tight leggings came down only to his knees. He nodded to the swordmasters, ignoring the gentlemanly light eyes they'd sought out for him to spar, and stepped into the wrestling ring with Auriton Kahl. His guards gave the swordmasters a kind of apologetic shrug, then Ryle counted off a start to the wrestling match. Dalinar immediately lunged forward and slammed into Kahl, grabbing him under the arms, struggling to hold his feet back and force his opponent off balance. The wrestling match would eventually go to the ground, but you wanted to be the one who controlled when and how that happened. There was no grabbing the leggings in a traditional Veja match, and of course no grabbing hair, so Dalinar twisted, trying to get his opponent into a sturdy hold while preventing the man from shoving Dalinar over.
Dalinar scrambled, his muscles taut, his fingers slipping on his opponent's skin. For those frantic moments, he could focus only on the match, his strength against that of his opponent. Sliding his feet, twisting his weight, straining for purchase. There was a purity to the contest, a simplicity that he hadn't experienced in what seemed like ages. Aratan pulled Dalinar tight, then managed to twist, tripping Dalinar over his hip. They went to the mat, and Dalinar grunted, raising his arm to his neck to prevent a chokehold, turning his head. Old training prompted him to twist and writhe before the opponent could get a good grip on him. Too slow. It had been years since he'd done this regularly. The other man moved with Dalinar's twist, foregoing the attempt at a chokehold, instead getting Dalinar under the arms from behind and pressing him down, face against the mat, his weight on top of Dalinar. Dalinar growled, and by instinct reached out for that extra reserve he'd always had. The pulse of the fight, the edge, the thrill. Soldiers spoke of it in the quiet of the night over campfires. That battle rage unique to the Alethi. Some called it the power of their ancestors, others the true mindset of the soldier. It had driven the Sunmaker to glory. It was the open secret of Alethi success. No, Dalinar stopped himself from reaching for it, but he needn't have worried. He couldn't remember feeling the thrill in months, and the longer he'd been apart from it, the more he'd begun to recognize that there was something profoundly wrong about the thrill. So he gritted his teeth and struggled, cleanly and fairly, with his opponent. And got pinned. Aratan was younger, more practiced at this style of fight. Dalinar didn't make it easy, but he was on the bottom, lacked leverage, and simply wasn't as young as he'd once been. Aratan twisted him over, and before too long, Dalinar found himself pressed to the mat, shoulders down, completely immobilized. Dalinar knew he was beaten, but couldn't bring himself to tap out. Instead, he strained against the hold, teeth gritted, and sweat pouring down the sides of his face. He became aware of something, not the thrill, but stormlight in the pocket of his uniform trousers, lying beside the ring. Aratan grunted, arms like steel. Dalinar smelled his own sweat, the rough cloth of the mat. His muscles protested the treatment. He knew he could seize the stormlight power, but his sense of fairness protested at the mere thought. Instead, he arched his back, holding his breath and heaving with everything he had, then twisted, trying to get back on his face for the leverage to escape. His opponent shifted, then groaned, and Dalinar felt the man's grip slipping slowly.
"Oh, for storm's sake," a feminine voice said. "Dalinar?"
Dalinar's opponent let go immediately, backing away. Dalinar twisted, puffing from exertion, to find Navani standing outside the ring with arms folded. He grinned at her, then stood up and accepted a light Takama overshirt and towel from an aide. As Aratan Kahl retreated, Dalinar raised a fist to him and bowed his head, a sign that Dalinar considered Aratan the victor.
"Well played, son. An honor, sir."
Dalinar threw on the Takama, turning to Navani and wiping his brow with the towel.
"Come to watch me spar?"
"Yes, what every wife loves," Navani said. "Seeing that in his spare time her husband likes to roll around on the floor with half-naked, sweaty men."
She glanced at Aratan.
"Shouldn't you be sparring with men closer to your own age?"
"On the battlefield," Dalinar said, "I don't have the luxury of choosing the age of my opponent. Best to fight at a disadvantage here to prepare."
He hesitated, then said more softly, "I think I almost had him anyway."
"Your definition of almost is particularly ambitious, Gem Heart."
Dalinar accepted a waterskin from an aide. Though Navani and her aides weren't the only women in the room, the others were ardents. Navani, in her bright yellow gown, still stood out like a flower on a barren stone field. As Dalinar scanned the chamber, he found that many of the Ardents, not just the Swordmasters, failed to meet his gaze. And there was Kadash, his former comrade in arms, speaking with the Swordmasters. Nearby, Aratan was receiving congratulations from his friends. Pinning the blackthorn was considered quite the accomplishment. The young man accepted their praise with a grin, but he held his shoulder and winced when someone slapped him on the back.
I should have tapped out, Dalinar thought.
Pushing the contest had endangered them both. He was annoyed at himself. He'd specifically chosen someone younger and stronger, then became a poor loser? Getting older was something he needed to accept, and he was kidding himself if he actually thought this would help him on the battlefield. He'd given away his armor, no longer carried a shard blade. When exactly did he expect to be fighting in person again?
The man with nine shadows.
The water suddenly tasted stale in his mouth. He'd been expecting to fight the enemy's champion himself, assuming he could even make the contest happen to their advantage. But wouldn't assigning the duty to someone like Kaladin make far more sense?
Well, Navani said, you might want to throw on a uniform. The Irriali Queen is ready.
The meeting isn't for a few hours.
She wants to do it now. Apparently her court tide reader saw something in the waves that means an earlier meeting is better. She should be contacting us any minute.
Storming Irriali. Still, they had an oath gate. Two, if you counted the one in the kingdom of Rira, which Iri had sway over. Among Iri's three monarchs, currently two kings and a queen, the latter had authority over foreign policy, so she was the one they needed to talk to.
I'm fine with moving up the time, Dalinar said.
I'll await you in the writing chamber.
Why? Dalinar said, waving a hand. It's not like she can see me. Set up here.
Here,
Navani said flatly.
Here,
Dalinar said, feeling stubborn. I've had enough of cold chambers, silent save for the scratching of reeds. Navani raised an eyebrow at him, but ordered her assistants to get out their writing materials. A worried Ardent came over, perhaps trying to dissuade her, but after a few firm orders from Navani, he went running to get her a bench and table. Dalinar smiled and went to select two training swords from a rack near the swordmaster's. Common longswords of unsharpened steel. He tossed one to Kadash, who caught it smoothly but then placed it in front of him with point down, resting his hands on the pommel.
Bright Lord, Kadash said, I would prefer to give this task to another, as I don't particularly feel
tough, Dalinar said.
I need some practice, Kadash. As your master, I demand you give it to me.
Kadash stared at Dalinar for a protracted moment, then let out an annoyed huff and followed Dalinar to the ring.
I won't be much of a match for you, Bright Lord. I have dedicated my years to scripture, not the sword. I was only here to
check up on me, I know.
Well, maybe I'll be rusty, too. I haven't fought with a common longsword in decades. I always had something better.
Yes, I remember when you first got your blade. The world itself trembled on that day, Dalinar Cullen.
Don't be melodramatic, Dalinar said. I was merely one in a long line of idiots given the ability to kill people too easily.
Ryle hesitantly counted the start to the match, and Dalinar rushed in swinging. Kadash rebuffed him competently, then stepped to the side of the ring.
Pardon, Bright Lord. But you were different from the others. You were much, much better at the killing part.
I always have been, Dalinar thought, rounding Kadash. It was odd to remember the Ardent as one of his elites. They hadn't been close then. They'd only become so during Kadash's years as an Ardent. Navani cleared her throat.
Hate to interrupt this stick-wagging, she said, but the Queen is ready to speak with you, Dalinar.
Great, he said, not taking his eyes off Kadash. Read me what she says.
While you're sparring?
Sure.
He could practically feel Navani roll her eyes. He grinned, coming in at Kadash again. She thought he was being silly. Perhaps he was. He was also failing. One at a time, the world's monarchs were shutting him out. Only Taravangian of the Carbranth, known to be slow-witted, had agreed to listen to him. Dalinar was doing something wrong. In an extended war campaign, he'd have forced himself to look at his problems from a new perspective. Bring in new officers to voice their ideas. Try to approach battles from different terrain. Dalinar clashed blades with Kadash, smashing metal against metal.
High Prince, Navani read as he fought, it is with wondrous awe at the grandeur of the One that I approach you. The time for the world to undergo a glorious new experience has arrived.
Glorious, Your Majesty? Dalinar said, swiping at Kadash's leg. The man dodged back. Surely you can't welcome these events?
All experience is welcome, came the reply. We are the One experiencing itself, and this new storm is glorious even if it brings pain.
Dalinar grunted, blocking a backhand from Kadash. Swords rang loudly.
I hadn't realized, Navani noted, that she was so religious.
Pagan superstition, Kadash said, sliding back across the mat from Dalinar. At least the Azish have the decency to worship the heralds, although they blasphemously place them above the Almighty. The Iriali are no better than Shin Shamans.
I remember, Kadash, Dalinar said, when you weren't nearly so judgmental.
I've been informed that my laxness might have served to encourage you.
I always found your perspective to be refreshing.
He stared right at Kadash, but spoke to Navani.
Tell her, Your Majesty, as much as I welcome a challenge, I fear the suffering these new experiences will bring. We must be unified in the face of the coming dangers.
Unity, Kadash said softly. If that is your goal, Dalinar, then why do you seek to rip apart your own people? Navani started writing. Dalinar drew closer, passing his longsword from one hand to the other.
How do you know, Kadash? How do you know the Iriali are the pagans?
Kadash frowned. Though he wore the square beard of an Ardent, that scar on his head wasn't the only thing that set him apart from his fellows. They treated swordplay like just another art. Kadash had the haunted eyes of a soldier. When he dueled, he kept watch to the sides in case someone tried to flank him. An impossibility in a solo duel, but all too likely on a battlefield.
How can you ask that, Dalinar?
Because it should be asked, Dalinar said. You claim the Almighty is God. Why?
Because he simply is.
That isn't good enough for me, Dalinar said, realizing for the first time it was true. Not anymore.
The Ardent growled, then leaped in, attacking with real determination this time. Dalinar danced backward, fending him off, as Navani read, loudly,
High Prince, I will be frank. The Iriali Triumvirate is in agreement. Alethkar has not been relevant in the world since the Sunmaker's fall. The power of the ones who control the new storm, however, is undeniable. They offer gracious terms.
Dalinar stopped in place, dumbfounded.
You'd side with the Voidbringers? He asked toward Navani, but then was forced to defend himself from Kadash, who hadn't let up.
What? Kadash said, clanging his blade against Dalinar's. Surprised someone is willing to side with evil, Dalinar? That someone would pick darkness, superstition, and heresy instead of the Almighty's light?
I am not a heretic.
Dalinar slapped Kadash's blade away, but not before the Ardent scored a touch on Dalinar's arm. The hit was hard, and though the swords were blunted, that would bruise for certain.
You just told me you doubted the Almighty, Kadash said. What is left after that?
I don't know, Dalinar said.
He stepped closer.
I don't know, and that terrifies me, Kadash. But Honor spoke to me, confessed that he was beaten.
The princes of the Voidbringers, Kadash said, were said to be able to blind the eyes of men, to send them lies, Dalinar.
He rushed in, swinging, but Dalinar danced back, retreating around the rim of the dueling ring.
My people,
Navani said, reading a reply from the Queen of Eerie,
do not want war. Perhaps the way to prevent another desolation is to let the Voidbringers take what they wish.
From our histories, sparse though they are, it seems that this was the one option men never explored. An experience from the one we rejected.